view nature as being actually a part of how God communicates to us. The early church fathers, many of the Middle Ages saints, all had this great awareness of creation and all that God used it for. We also kind of played around a little bit with quantum physics and seeing that God is actually at work in all things, and he's present, and he's involved, actually much closer than we would think. And that diversity actually plays into God's ultimate plan, the way he actually has formed and ordered the world. And today, I guess I'd almost say this is more some musings. Some of this you might have heard me say before. Some of it will be a little different. But we're just going to look at nature and be aware of the sacredness in all things. And I want to start by considering two verses. One that we use a lot here in the dwelling place. One of Shane's favorite sayings is, we don't start the Bible at Genesis chapter 3, we start at Genesis chapter 1. And if you do actually start at Genesis chapter 1, the first commandment in the scriptures is to take care of the earth, to pasture the earth. The word that a lot of translations use is subdue or have dominion. And it's actually not a great fit. Eugene Peterson says this in The Message. God blessed Adam and Eve and said, prosper, reproduce, fill earth, take charge. Be responsible for the fish in the sea and birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. And the fact that we have kind of gone more with language like subdue and have dominion has kind of taken us out of this relationship of being responsible for and kind of put us over. Like we're to be in charge of everything and everything's supposed to be under us. But we tend to use terms like being responsible, pastoring. One of Shane's favorites is being vice regents with God. We have kind of lost that in the Western world, especially here in North America. No continent has experienced the exploitation that North America has experienced over the last 200, 300 years. Capitalism, as it becomes stronger and stronger, the determining factor is often not how do we be responsible and pastor, but how do we use these things for our own good. The term natural resources kind of even speaks of consumerism right when you start to use it. Another scripture I want to talk about for just a minute is in Acts chapter 17. Paul is on the hill of Athens. He's speaking to a huge crowd who are philosophically very aware. They're very savvy. And he kind of is trying to introduce them to God. And he says, from one ancestor, he made all nations to inhabit the whole earth. And he allotted the times of their existence and the boundaries of the places where they would live so that they would search for God and perhaps grope for him and find him, though indeed he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, for we too are his offspring. We kind of made this point last week that as we begin to understand the way the world works and everything that's going on, we understand that we actually in him live and move and have our being, and we're involved in this relationship with God. And one time I was telling somebody using this verse when I was talking about this, and their response to me was, oh yeah, but Paul says that he's quoting pagan poets. But he was quoting them in such a way that they seemed to be right. That's kind of how it made the scriptures. And sometimes we're just really quick to knock stuff down, but Paul was like, hey, these guys said it. It's exactly how I would say it. That's exactly what your own people have said, and this is where it is. And it kind of brings me to a point today. I want to just talk a little bit for a minute because we're going to look at some different places than we maybe normally would in a message. And one thing about interfaith activity that always interests me is you learn that we don't know everything. and that other people sometimes got to stuff before we did. So there's a sense of humility, and there's an awareness, especially the more we learn what's going on in other parts of the world, and the more we have come to understand those things, that actually there's history that's bigger than just the Western world. I just want to use one example. I didn't get to it last week because there just wasn't time. In the 15th and 16th centuries, or 16th and 17th, excuse me, two guys, Nicolai Copernicus and Galileo Galilei, came up with this concept that the sun was the center of our galaxy. Copernicus was heavily persecuted. Galileo was thrown under house arrest for coming up with such a crazy idea that everything actually revolved around the sun. And this was in the 1700s. And in fact, it became known in the science world as Copernicus's revolution, because this was kind of mind-boggling that somebody would bring up this idea that everything revolved around the sun. Now, I just want to point this out, and those of you who went with us to the Hindu temple may remember this was the very last display that Anita showed us. But the Hindus and the Indian world had this concept in 2000 BC, 3,500 years before the Copernican Revolution. And so my point is just this. Sometimes other people have gotten there before we did. And it's okay to learn and maybe gain some insight and awareness of different things from some of these people. I'm going to give you an example. This is really kind of fun for me. There's a group of people, the Navajo Indians, and they have a word, Hozho. H-O-Z-H-O. It means joy. And there's a woman who these days is kind of becoming fairly prominent. She has learned the Diné language, and she's going back and reading through some of the early documents. And read this with me. This is a Navajo perspective. The Navajo philosophy is that we are not only accepted by Creator and creation, but we are celebrated by Creator and creation. Joy is the natural result of knowing oneself in relation to all of life. To know oneself is to understand the grand celebration we are a part of and the sacred being that we are. It is to know without a doubt that we are loved profoundly by the Creator, no matter what has been done to us or what we have done to others. From this fertile ground of self-understanding, there can sprout a real relationship with Earth. This relationship is a true communion as it was created to be. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that you've probably heard almost that exact language right here in this church. And this was one of the groups that we thought it was pretty necessary to wipe out because of their savagery and all that kind of thing. And so sometimes there are ways that we can learn and understand from other people. Now, what's my point? My point is that we, through our Western movements toward technology and enlightenment and civilization, have lost some of the sense of the sacredness of what creation, what nature is really all about. We don't really see ourselves as being responsible for the earth anymore, but we tend to look for what's the most profitable, what's going to be the biggest economic gain. And we've kind of lost a way of thinking that what are we handing on to the next generation? Or as the Native Americans used to say, any decision they made, they had to know how it would affect seven generations out. But even in the Hebrew scriptures, we have the idea of Sabbath. For the land, not for us, but for the land, every 7 years, everything was supposed to be allowed to just lay dormant. Everything was to be allowed to rest. And then you had, after seven cycles of seven, you had the year of Jubilee, where for a whole year, nothing was to be planted, Nothing was to be cultivated. The land was supposed to be allowed to rest. There was to be a sense of responsibility, a sense of communion, as Lila Johnston said. And we don't really feel connected to the earth in that way anymore, that we would think of the earth needing a rest. Wendell Berry has mentioned on numerous occasions that Western Christianity just isn't earthly enough. We don't feel connected to the soil. And we've lost the sense that the kingdom is supposed to be functioning right here, right now, and involving everything that's around us. But that's where everything used to be. And we haven't only lost the sense of the earthly, but we've also lost the sense of the mysterious. The fact that the way God sees the world, the way he has his purposes, are probably different than what we're used to, what we would think of. How we would tend to view creation. We tend to see it more for our benefit than seeing it as us being in relationship with the earth, as us being a primary resource for the planet. Tending, pastoring, being responsible for its well-being. And it even affects the way we use language. If you look at a lot of the modern English language, when we're talking about things, 70% of the language is nouns. If you talk about most of the Native American languages, 70% of the language is verbs. And it changes the whole way you start to see things. For instance, we would say, there's a river. Native Americans would say, there's water being a river. There's water being a lake. There's water being a bay. So there was almost a personification of the item instead of just objectivity. So it's that. And it doesn't really have any active part. But the more we begin to see this, as Shane said just a few minutes ago, we begin to realize this personification actually leads us into an awareness that we're actually involved in the process of being part of God's creation, of being aware of what's going on around us. There's a guy named Black Elk. He died in 1950. He is probably considered the last of the great indigenous spiritual leaders of the North American tribes. Something that I just found this out yesterday. He is actually being researched right now by the Vatican for possible sainthood. He would be only the second Native American to become a saint. And here's what he says. He says, we regard all created beings as sacred and important, for everything has a Wo-Chang-Yi, I think I'm saying that right, or an influence which can be given to us, through which we may gain a little more understanding if we are attentive. We should understand well that all things are the works of the Great Spirit. We should know that he is within all things, the trees, the grasses, the rivers, the mountains, and all the four-legged animals and the winged peoples. And even more important, we should understand that he is also above all things and all peoples. I would like to grab one phrase that he shares here, and it is this: everything has an influence through which we may gain a little more understanding if we are attentive. I would suggest to you that that's a big part of our problem. We are no longer a society that is attentive to nature, to creation, to the world around us. There's an ecological theologian named Thomas Berry. No, he is no relation to Wendell Berry. It's kind of amazing, the two biggies in the Christian world in the 20th century in terms of ecology and environment are both Berry, but they're not related. They do have a cousin named Blue, but we're not going to get into that today. He says this: we are only talking to ourselves. We are not talking to the rivers. We are not listening to the wind and stars. We have broken the great conversation. By breaking that conversation, we have shattered the universe, and all the disasters that are happening now are a consequence of that spiritual autism. Now, I'm aware that this is language we're not used to using, as Shane pointed out just a minute ago. We don't talk this way anymore. And in fact, people are starting to go, okay, we're headed into some really weird territory here. But the fact is, creation used this kind of language, or the scriptures used this kind of language about creation frequently. God used various things all the time. We have just stopped being attentive. We have stopped being in a place where we're actually able to hear. We don't really have the luxury anymore of actually watching food grow, to see the process, to know what we're actually involved with or picking. We don't see animals in their natural habitat very often anymore. It's just not part of our society because of the way we've structured our cities and everything. And most of us don't really see landscapes that are being wiped out or moved or shifted in order to find more and more fuel and resources in different ways. We have kind of almost shut down this possibility of God speaking. One night I was outside and I was looking up at the sky. And of course, we live in a neighborhood and there are lots of outdoor lights and there are all kinds of things around. And I thought, you know, if God had brought Abraham out here and said, Abraham, look at the stars, everything you see, that's how many children you're going to have. Abraham would have said, a couple dozen, it's not that impressive. As opposed to being some place where you can see the Milky Way and all the stars and everything that is there. And a lot of our technology has quieted the way God speaks to us. We don't really allow that sort of thing to happen so much. And in the process of that, we've lost part of the mystery. There's a woman named Robin Wall Kimmerer. She wrote a book called Braiding Sweetgrass. Highly recommend it. Claire got me looking at it. This woman is a PhD in biology, so she's very scientific, but she's also from the Potawatomi tribe. And she talks about Popowi, which is this mystery, this word which means the force which causes mushrooms to push up from the earth overnight. Science can tell us all kinds of stuff. Science can explain all kinds of things, but there are some parts that are just kind of like, this is pretty mysterious, this is pretty amazing, there's this growth, there's this development. There are the way that plants almost seem to speak to one another. Trees kind of warn each other about viruses or funguses and different things. What a mistake. All these kind of different things that we consider that we don't even think about anymore, but it's all part of the way the world works. And it's a mystery. It's something that God is continuously working in, but we don't even seem to see it. This is part of what actually some of the Native American tribes were kind of pretty held on to, was this fact that there was this big element of mystery. There's a guy named Carl Gorman. He's a Navajo artist. This is actually one of his paintings. We wouldn't completely land with all of this, but I just want you to look at what he has to say. It has been said by some researchers into Navajo religion that we have no supreme God because he is not named. Well, that is not so. The supreme being is not named because he is unknowable. He is simply the unknown power. We worship him through his creation. We feel too insignificant to approach directly in prayer that great power that is incomprehensible to man. Nature feeds our soul's inspiration, and so we approach him through that part of him which is close to us and within reach of human understanding. We believe that this great unknown power is everywhere in his creation. The very forms of creation have some of this spirit within them, and as every form has some of the intelligent spirit of the Creator, we cannot but reverence all parts of the creation. Now, of course, we're going to go a little bit further and say that the incarnation is the ultimate display of the nature of who God is. But I think there's something to be learned from those who reverence the sacred in all parts of creation. There's something for us to know and understand, because we have, again, we've lost this sense of where things were going. Last week, Josh Bougie came up to me afterward, and he said, you know, when I first became a Christian, I felt like my Christianity worked as long as I stayed within the four walls. But when I went outside, it seemed to fall apart, until I began to find the church fathers and began to see the way they viewed the world and the depth of their understanding of the human psyche. And then a lot of things begin to make much more sense to me. And I feel like that's kind of where we are in some ways today. If we keep it inside the walls, a lot of what's going on in the name of Christianity is okay. But there's this huge creation around us that we're being asked to be a part of, to be interacting with those things. And when we begin to see creation, we begin to develop a respect. The Native Americans used to call various animals winged people, four-legged people, the salmon people. They saw animals as more than just something to be used or to be ignored, in our case more often. But they valued the species, and they considered everything to be part of God's symphony that was going on all the time. But we have to take the time to see. We have to take the time to listen. We have to take the time to be attentive. Two things I want to just think about for a minute. First of all, a sound. We're finding out more and more that the universe actually makes noise. John sent me a couple articles on solar winds. And if you play with solar winds, you actually start getting sound patterns. And there's actually music being created from solar winds, gamma rays, thermonuclear kind of stuff. The Hindu community always talks about the divine Om, this sound that was present when the earth was created, and it's this megahertz that works. People use the Tibetan music bowl. I got to tell you a little story that Deb Foster told me last week. She has been doing the devotionals at the daycare where she teaches, and a friend of hers said, hey, you should try a Tibetan music bowl. It really calms the kids down. So Deb started using a Tibetan music bowl. And the tone and the megahertz are such that if you listen to it, it does kind of just calm your spirit. Well, it was actually going really well, and Deb said the kids were listening better. They were remembering more of the story. And by about the third day, the head came to her and said, you're going to have to quit using the Tibetan music bowl. Somebody thinks we're promoting Buddhism. And it was just the fact there are tones in creation that actually make sense. There are sounds. The Indians used the tube beat of the drum all the time, what they call the binaural beat, because it reflected what they called the heartbeat of God. There are things out there that actually help us reflect on the nature of who God is. The Celtic Christians used to talk about the Oran Mór. They called that the source, the divine intelligence. We would call it the logos that masterminded the universe. They said it was a great song of power, and to align oneself with the flow of this great music is to foster a life of wholeness, of healing, and of holism. It is a life of movement blended with a life of stillness. It's a deep spring that fills the sacred well of the soul. And I would suggest to you that creation is all the time singing in various ways, but we tend to drown out the noise. We tend to drown it out. Debbie and I go hiking quite a lot. We go to various woods. We go to parks, whatever. And I have to tell you, one thing that boggles my mind almost every time we're out is somebody walking or somebody jogging will go by, and they'll always have earbuds. And I'm thinking, I'm hearing 30 of the most amazing bird songs imaginable, and you have Ludacris in your head. And it's just like, what you're missing is quite remarkable, and we don't really give ourselves the opportunity to hear this song. The Celtics had what they called their creation story, and it says that the beginning of life, we know it was uttered long ago. The beginning of all life, we know it was uttered long ago by an ancient sounding. The sounding moved outward from a center point of being and continues hurtling through space and time, manifesting as a complex matrix of interconnections. We are part of this divine unfolding. There is no one and nothing outside it. It is our collective lineage, our collective story. There was this utterance that began all things. We would say in the beginning was the Word, this starting point where everything began. But I feel like we've kind of lost the ability to hear. I was thinking about this last night. We know, if you watch car commercials very often, now one of the latest features is every car is wireless. And if you drive behind almost any minivan, you will see at least two projector screens in the back of the van now where a DVD is playing continuously. Now, when I was a kid, we used to play horse, horse. Out the car window, and you had to look outside and you had to see what's going on in the world around you. But I thought, imagine if you're a child in the right family situation, you go from inside the house where you've been playing with your devices and all your things, you walk out the door, you're in nature for approximately 15 to 20 seconds, unless of course you got in the car in the garage, then you didn't even have to be outside. You get in the car and you immediately turn on the TV screen and you're now watching a DVD. And honestly, you could go through entire days without ever realizing that there's a world outside of your little insular bubble kind of structure. And we miss the sounds that are going on around us. Now, does that begin to have effect on us? I think it does. Two guys, 500 years apart, on different continents of the world, both saw something. Francis of Assisi said, "If you have men who will exclude any of God's creatures from the shelter of compassion and pity, you will have men who will deal likewise with their fellow men." About 500 years later, Chief Luther, standing bearer of the Lakota tribe here in North America, said the old Lakota was wise. He knew that man's heart away from nature becomes hard. He knew that lack of respect for growing living things soon led to lack of respect for humans too. And you ask yourself, why is there so much violence? Why do we treat each other the way we do? Why is rhetoric allowed to just run wild right now? Because I feel like a big part of it is we have lost touch with the world around us. We don't respect creation. We don't respect nature. We don't take time to be involved with things around us. And so it becomes all about us. If you're always in your house, if you're always in your car, if you're never looking at a world any bigger than what you're being told you need and deserve or are trying to have to get to the next step, you begin to lose a sense of respect for the world around you, the people around you. And these things begin to impact us. And it's kind of an interesting thing. I don't say this in any way other than to say this is kind of interesting. Sometimes, you know, I say something about Native Americans and people were like, well, yeah, but they never converted to Christianity and there were these problems. But if you read certain documents, there were reasons in their minds why they didn't. One of the things they say is we could never follow a religion that allows one man to own another man. That makes no sense to us. We could never follow a religion where you actually quarrel and even go to war about who God is. Which they were talking about Protestants and Catholics at the time. And then they also said that we were told repeatedly that one of the primary things is do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but we never got that treatment. So we're not really sure how it works. So I think that there's a sense of we have to realize other people have got things that we can learn from. Not necessarily saying one's better or worse than the other, but there are things that in our Western world we have lost sight of. And I think there's a situation where we, again, need to begin to awaken to the sacred. We need to begin to realize the depth, the breadth, and the diversity of the creation that is around us. There's so much more going on. After I spoke last week, I was having coffee with one of the people that was here, and he said to me, the one thing you didn't really say is how this has impacted you. How's this making a change for you? So this week, you're going to get how this has impacted me. Debbie and I started this summer sitting out on our front porch pretty much every night until it gets dark. Our porch faces west, so we saw sunset night after night after night. And what we began to notice was, even though we're in a neighborhood, we happen to be right by the dog park, so there are lots of trees, and we have an amazing amount of birds for a neighborhood. We started recognizing sounds. We started watching the way birds fly. Different birds have different wing patterns. Some really glide, some are really swoopy. You got herons who just kind of have this amazing form. You hear doves coming because their wings kind of make this sound, and you start to pick up on things. And you actually started to listen and watch and see what was going on right underneath our gutter. A dove was having a baby, and this thing would sit, and it looked like it was clay. It just wouldn't move until all of a sudden there was a second one there, and it was kind of amazing. And you just sort of started watching this stuff. Of course, I was always on the lookout for geese. And we've kind of almost lightheartedly made the comment that the Celtics considered the goose to be a symbol of the Holy Spirit. But I have to tell you folks, anytime I see geese now, my mind immediately goes to the presence of the Holy Spirit in the world. Now, I will tell you this, if I see a couple of really big V's, I immediately think, oh, there must be a revival going on. If it's just one or two, I think, well, somebody's not really as open as they ought to be. But you just begin to notice things in the world, and you begin to pick up, and you find yourself becoming more aware, more sensitive. We have just a little back patio because we've got a condo for our back porch, and we have a hummingbird feeder that we set up, and I also have specifically planted some flowers that are very heavy pollinated, extremely bee friendly. So in the morning, the bees are just going crazy on these guys. But what I've also found out is hummingbirds generally like the same plants most of the time. And we had one or two hummingbirds that just started showing up every day. In the summer, I read outside and I would have my head down, and usually the noise of the wings of the hummingbird would cause me to look up, because every once in a while you would think a F-15 was coming through the back. But a couple mornings, if I didn't hear it, I would hear this high-pitched chirp, which I debated whether I should try to let you hear what I heard, and I decided not to. And I would look up, and 3 feet away, staring at me, would be this hummingbird, just kind of waiting for me to acknowledge it. He'd kind of dance around a little bit, and then he would take off. And it got so common and so regular that Debbie would ask me, has the hummingbird stopped by to say hello yet? And we actually, I almost felt like if I'd have said, how's it going? He said, not too bad. Wings are getting a little tired, but it's going so far today. And, you just kind of start to realize there are things around to be aware of. And then, of course, I started watching clouds. And if you watch clouds, there are really actually all kinds of different clouds. Sound like a really bad science teacher at this point. But there are these amazing things going on in the sky. Yesterday, I was driving to a board meeting, and I have to go across 96th Street toward College First Baptist Church where we were meeting. And you go down College Road, and there was just this strip of cloud, and the sun was hitting it just right so that it was like a prism. And the more I moved toward it, the more the colors changed. And I thought, man, what a phenomenal thing to be seeing. But you become aware, and you start to look. And my sister's got the best view probably of any of us when it comes to sunsets, being 14 floors up. But sunsets are remarkable. Some nights they're pretty normal. There's not a whole lot going on, and then other nights they're just phenomenal. But here's the thing, every night they're different. And every night you almost feel like God is speaking to his world through the things going on. And then one of my big things is now I like to just watch the moon go through its phases. Watch the different places it shows up in the sky, because all the time there's stuff going on. All these things are speaking to us of who God is if we're willing to listen. And here's the thing. We never left our house. All that was right there. We would finish up every night, and we discovered that somewhere underneath our porch lived a little frog about so big. And we got into this pattern where right before it got completely dark, he would appear. And Debbie got to the place where she would be like, we're not going in until the frog shows up. And he would pop out. He'd sit on the sidewalk and just kind of hang out for a couple minutes, almost like he was getting his bearings. His day was beginning. Then he'd take off down the sidewalk. I don't know where he went. I felt like it was best not to ask. That was his private affair. But you just learn to start watching. All that stuff was around our house. And then I found this place, Cotiwi Park, up near Cicero. And when you begin to get out into creation and into nature, all kinds of stuff starts happening. That's from my favorite place on the White River, just looking down. Took that with my phone. And you begin to notice every day there's something new. One time we were there, we heard all these birds, all kinds of stuff going on. All of a sudden, Debbie nudges me, and here goes an eagle below tree line, just right down the river, not 20 feet away from me. Never seen one that close in my entire life. Blew my mind. One day, not that long ago, we were out there, and we saw this huge line of dead leaves going down the river. And I said to Debbie, look at that. It's almost like a funeral procession. And nature dies, and it comes back to life, and there are all kinds of things for us to learn and be taught if we're willing to listen. Because one thing I thought about after that is actually, a lot of times nature is at its most beautiful right before it dies off. And what should that say to us about the way we treat elders and people from older generations? There is sometimes this beauty that our society, in our haste and our hurry and our rush and our youthfulness, we completely forget and we miss. But nature all the time is speaking things to us. It's teaching us lessons over and over and over. And so I think there are so many ways, if we learn to slow down, if we learn to breathe, if we actually start looking for the mystery, we begin to find the sacred is all around us all the time. I have to be honest with you. Every time I walk out a door now, my eyes immediately go up to the clouds just to see what kind of formation's going on today, because every time it's something new, it's something interesting, it's something that the Creator is displaying his artwork again, as we said in our call to worship. And I think that part of this awareness then makes us aware of other people, makes us aware of other situations. It takes us outside of ourselves, and we begin to see the vastness of what's around us. And then I think it brings us to this, gratitude. It brings us to a place where we are thankful for all that's going on. Debbie, you can go ahead and start passing those out if you want. I came across a document again. This is mentioned in the book, Braiding Sweetgrass. There is a group of Indians called the, and I'm sure this isn't exactly right, but here we go, the Haudenosaunee. And they have a document called the Thanksgiving Address. But what it is actually called in their native language is the words that come before all else. And if you read the history of this address, different tribes have different versions. The Onondaga had one, the Navajo had one, various groups had them, and I'm not going to have you read it all now. These are for you to take. But they would not start a meeting until they had gone through this. And when you have some time to look at it, they thank the earth, the waters, fish, plants, food plants, medicine herbs, animals, trees, birds, the four winds, thunders, the sun, the moon, the stars, the enlightened teachers they have had, and finally they thank the Creator. And they called this the words that must be said before all else. In the Native American schools, instead of the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning, they would do this. And one of the stories talks about how they were in a meeting where they were trying to settle some disputes about some tribal lands, and the attorneys who were at the table were noticeably going slightly insane as these Native Americans just kept displaying their gratitude for all these parts of nature. But they felt that once they had done that, everybody's mind and attitude and outlook would be in a place where they could now begin to converse back and forth. Because now they were working from a place of gratitude instead of what I need to get out of this deal. It's kind of fascinating. So take that home and sometime take a couple minutes and just read through it. It's really quite amazing. All the things that in their opinion had to be acknowledged before anything else would happen in any kind of meeting. So I guess it basically is this: the awakening to the sacred means that it's not simply about becoming a good environmentalist, although that's likely to happen on some level. It's more about opening yourself to see and hear God speak in ways that we have kind of lost in our society, in our Western world. It's allowing him to show himself in new ways, ways that we consider new but are actually really old, that have been around for centuries and we've just kind of covered it over with all of our own stuff. And as we have this awakening, we will gain a greater understanding, I think, of the vastness of who God is, of the dimensions of who he is, of the creativity and the uniqueness and the diversity and the many ways he can do things. And I'm willing to suggest that we don't have to be afraid of learning from others who have kind of kept up with some of this stuff better than we have, and that it's okay to be taught that there are some parts that maybe in our Western society we've kind of lost. Because God is calling us back, as Shane spent several weeks on not that long ago, bringing us back to the place where we see the value of our work, the significance of what it means to be a co-creator with him in every dimension of life, in all the things that are going on around us. So I would just encourage you, allow yourself the time to be awakened to the sacred again and all the things that are around us.